More fallout from the Trinity Western Law School case.
I would say their assessment of core values of Canadians is not only inappropriate, but blatantly incorrect. So my question to the Bank of Montreal is, if I don't adhere to their core values at the Bank of Montreal, are they still going to take my money?
On the feature interview today, Senator Don Platt talking about a new effort by some business groups to insist on their version of diversity in Canadian society. Senator Platt will also update us on the progress of the so-called bathroom bill in the Senate. On the news portion, Alberta backs down on a controversial plan to impose gay-straight alliance clubs on all schools in that province. In Ontario, more questions over proposed sex education curricula. An analysis today of some legal changes surrounding abortion in New Brunswick. And a look at a new bill being proposed in the Senate on assisted suicide.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
The Alberta government has done an about-face on a proposal that would have forced all schools in the province, including private, parochial, or Christian schools, to consent to the formation of so-called gay-straight alliance clubs. The proposal was initially put forward as a private members' bill, then the government took it on with a few amendments. The bill would also allow schools to teach issues like sexual orientation without informing parents. The bill passed an initial reading by a vote of 40-10, but as it was getting ready for third reading, Premier Jim Prentice announced they were withdrawing it.
Unfortunately, I think it's accurate to say that Bill 10 has added to rather than resolved these divisions. And I accept personal responsibility for that as the Premier. I'm most disturbed that our gay and lesbian youth are caught in the middle of a very divisive debate. This they didn't ask for. And for the most part, these are young people trying to find their way in life and in our province. At present, there clearly is no consensus in Alberta on either the constitutionality or the wisdom of the provincial government mandating gay-straight alliances in schools. The issue was polarizing to begin with and has become ever more so over the past several days.
To be clear, it appears part of the reason Prentice withdrew the bill was because of opposition from the LGBTQ community. They didn't like the bill because one of the concessions the government had made to independent schools was to say that in some instances those GSA clubs could be forced to meet in locations other than schools. There were protests against that, with people saying it would perpetuate the marginalization of gay students. ARPA's Mark Penninga says it shows that the government's stated intent to balance the rights of the two sides in this debate was based on a philosophical myth.
The education system can't be neutral. Those pushing for the promotion of homosexuality, they get that. And that's why they're demanding that all schools, including private Christian schools, become places that welcome, celebrate gay-straight alliances. And it should be a wake-up call to all parents, because this is what happens when education's taken over by the state. It's not the role of the state to indoctrinate children. We believe that God entrusts parents with that responsibility, with the authority to educate their children. And if they do that together by joining with other parents to form a school, it doesn't mean they give up that responsibility. I'm concerned that Christian parents have been all too trusting of the state's role in the education of their children. Parents and schools shouldn't be following the beck and call of the government. And I think we're beginning to see the reality that it can't be neutral. And I really do hope this is a wake-up call for parents to stand up for the authority that's been given to them.
There's no indication if or when the government might come back with yet another revision of this law. There's also some controversy over parents' rights in Ontario. The Kathleen Wynne government has started a public consultation process on a new sex education curriculum that's supposed to go online in September of next year. Peter John Mitchell is with the Institute for Marriage and Families Canada. He says there's a lot of secrecy surrounding exactly what is being proposed, but a lot of parents are worried the bill will mirror what was tried a few years ago.
We're not actually sure what's in the curriculum. What we know is based on the 2010 curriculum that was put forward and then rescinded by the Ministry of Education when they failed to adequately communicate it and failed to anticipate parental concern. In that curriculum, there were things that caused parents to have pause, whether that was the introduction of oral and anal sex in grade 7, talk of self-stimulation in grade 6, and discussion around gender formation. and that kind of thing in grade three. So that really gave parents some pause as to whether this was appropriate timing for their own child.
Mitchell says while there may be a limited role for sex education in the school system, there's a general tendency on the part of governments to overstep their bounds in this area.
There was a study done in 2002 in New Brunswick that showed that parents feel quite capable in being able to communicate to their kids about sexual health issues. Now, they might want a little bit of help, they might want a little bit of resources, but overall, they feel quite capable in doing that. And in fact, researchers of that study said that to have a healthy school program, you need parents to buy in. So I think the problem is that we often err the other way, that we put so much expectations on the curriculum that are unreasonable and not enough expectations on parents to respond.
He says the biggest problem with the consultation process remains fundamentally that most parents are being asked for input into a curriculum that they haven't seen the details of. In New Brunswick, the new Liberal government of Premier Brian Gallant has followed through on an election promise with respect to the abortion issue. The health ministry is rewriting its regulations and removing a provision that a woman needs the consent of two doctors before she can get an abortion. Jonathan Van Maren is with the Centre for Bioethical Reform. He says while it may be tempting, we shouldn't read too much into this move.
I'm not going to pretend that this was a victory for us. It's definitely a symbolic victory for the pro-choice side. But what they've been pushing for a couple of years now is cash funding for the Morgenthaler Clinic in Fredericton, which actually just shut down in August because they claim that in order to keep running their outpatient clinic, they need money from the government. So this decision that the pro-choicers have been waiting for quite some time didn't give them the one concrete thing they were actually looking for, which was cash for the Fredericton Clinic. So I got a bit irritated when pro-lifers came out and said this is going to result in thousands and thousands more abortions, which I don't think is true at all, simply due to the fact that there's no record that any woman was ever denied an abortion under the two-doctor rule.
But Martin says it's also significant that the change is being made as a regulation, which can be done internally by the bureaucrats, rather than having the issue come to the full legislature for debate as an actual change in the law. He says a lot of the Liberal members of the legislature are Catholic, and Premier Gallant might actually have lost if the issue had come to a vote on the floor of his legislature. And finally, more on the issue of assisted suicide. There's a new bill being debated in the Senate. Alex Schadenberg with the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition says Bill S-225 replaces a private member's bill that had been forwarded from the House of Commons.
The bill that has been proposed in the Senate is very similar to the previous bill by Stephen Fletcher. They did clean up the language a tiny bit in it, but it's essentially the same, which means it's attempting to legalize both euthanasia, which is lethal injection, and assisted suicide, which would be death by lethal dose. So it's a fairly wide bill, and it's not designed for someone who's terminally ill, even though obviously someone who's terminally ill could use it. It's designed for somebody with a disability, such as Stephen Fletcher, which means the definitions are specifically widely opened in order to allow someone who's not terminally ill to die by euthanasia or assisted suicide.
Schadenberg has been meeting with senators on this issue, lobbying against the bill, and he says there's a pretty good chance it won't pass.
A lot of people will have some sympathy towards the issue of euthanasia and assisted suicide, especially since Brittany Maynard's death recently in Oregon, as well as related to the fact that it's being pushed by Stephen Fletcher, who's a quadriplegic man. Nonetheless, when you read the bill and you start thinking about what the application of the language of the bill will mean, I have a very strong feeling that this bill will be defeated.
Schadenberg says with the pending Supreme Court ruling on the Carter case, expected sometime in March or April, there's a good chance this issue will end up becoming a major topic of discussion during next fall's federal election campaign. Back with more after this.
The board and staff of ARPA Canada are preparing for the annual board meeting at the end of January. Do you have travel points in excess or that you are unable to use? Did you know that travel points can be donated? In order to keep our travel costs low, we are looking for donated travel points. If you have points to donate or would like to learn more about how you can help us, please email info@arpacanada.ca.
And we're back on the program. On the line with me is Senator Don Platt from Ottawa. Senator Platt is fairly familiar to social conservatives. Among other things, he's the former president of the Conservative Party of Canada, appointed to the Senate a few years ago. And we're going to talk about a couple of issues this morning, things we kind of touched on a little bit in the news portion already, the whole question of gender identity and religious freedom. Last month, the Bank of Montreal and 70-plus other corporations launched an effort at what they call diversity. The bank heading up the charge with a letter to the Ontario Bar Association challenging Trinity Western University's efforts to start the Christian Law School. And now they've contacted all their legal suppliers, requiring that the law firms that they do business with disclose the diversity statistics of their associates and their partners and such. Senator Platt, this whole issue is really starting to spin up a little bit. If a bank can do this, what implications does this have for other sectors of society? Can we expect, you know, to see other big corporations doing the same thing? I know we've got 70 on the list already. Is this going to become a standard?
Well, Al, I mean, clearly myself and others are very concerned about this, and that is why I wrote a letter to Mr. Fish at the Bank of Montreal stating my concerns when an organization like the Bank of Montreal can make comments like, we need to make sure that the core values of Canadians are being protected. I'm wondering what makes them the defender of what core values of Canadians are. 70% of Canadians identify as Christian. And so I would say their assessment of core values of Canadians is not only inappropriate, but blatantly incorrect. If this was done attacking any other faith institution other than a Christian one, there would be absolute outcry across the country. And so my question to the Bank of Montreal as well is, if I don't adhere to their core values at the Bank of Montreal, are they still going to take my money?
And that sort of leads to the other question. I mean, it appears this action, at least on the surface, was precipitated by the whole Trinity Western debate. I'm not asking for a legal opinion here, but this does seem to beg the question about whether there's a built-in bias here against people of faith generally, be they Christian or Muslim or Jewish or Sikh, if they don't happen to hold to the diversity creed as sort of promoted by BMO and other organizations like this.
Well, I think, Al, there is. However, BMO or any other organization would never dare attack a Muslim or a Jewish school the way they are attacking Trinity Western. And thank you for not asking for a legal opinion, because I am certainly not a lawyer, but in fact, the Supreme Court of Canada ruled in favor of Trinity Western a few years ago when the BC College of Teachers was trying to deny accreditation to Trinity Western on their teaching degrees. And the court ruled in favor of Trinity Western because, and this is what they said, for better or worse, tolerance of divergent beliefs is a hallmark of our democratic society. And so this has been at the Supreme Court, and I'm certainly hoping that Trinity Western will again take it to the Supreme Court. It's unfortunate, but I'm hoping they will, and I have every confidence that our Supreme Court will again rule in favor of Trinity Western.
I'm looking at some of the broader implications here. If the Bank of Montreal or some of these other organizations can say, you know what, we're only going to do business with people who share our particular views, could, for example, graduates of parochial or independent faith-based schools be denied admission to secular universities based on the faith statements of those independent schools?
Well, without a doubt, and I'm wondering whether undergrads from a school like Trinity Western, who have gone on and gone to different law schools somewhere else, undergrads from Trinity Western, how will they be treated? How will people who have attended faith-based schools, whether in Canada or in the United States or anywhere else, will they have their accreditation stripped or questioned because they have been there? You know, Trinity Western's curriculum is exactly the same as any secular law school, and so this is not an attack on that aspect. This is an attack very clearly on Trinity Western because they are a Christian faith-based institution.
Second issue I'd like to talk to you about today is Bill C-279. Most people don't know it by its number, but it's been called the bathroom bill. It's passed through the House. It's before the Senate. Now, I guess first I'd ask you to provide a brief description of what this bill is about and what it would do.
Well, absolutely, Al. Now, I want to be on record very clearly, as I do not and never have called it the bathroom bill, and it's unfortunate that it was called that by one individual, and that has somewhat stuck. But Bill 279 amends the criminal code to add the word gender identity as a prohibited ground for hate crimes and hate speech. Then it also amends the Canadian Human Rights Act to add gender identity as a prohibited ground of discrimination. That is what the bill is. What's wrong with the bill? Well, the bill's definition for gender identity is an individual's deeply held internal experience of gender, regardless of whether it correlates with the sex the individual was assigned at birth. Simply, it allows any person to self-identify as any gender at any time and demand access to any sex-specific facility. So there are clearly some of the problems with it, and there are unintended consequences.
Talk to me about those. What are the unintended consequences?
Well, I'll briefly use a case of Christopher Hanbrook. Christopher Hanbrook was in prison for sex crimes against women. He was in prison. He came out of prison. He went to a women's shelter in Toronto. He walked in the front door, identified himself as transgender. The shelter, by their own code of conduct, if you will, was obligated to take Christopher Hanbrook in. He called himself Jessica. They gave him shelter during the night. They put him up in a room with two other women. During the course of the night, he sexually assaulted or molested these two women. Now, people say, well, Christopher Hanbrook is in jail again as a result of that. But that's very little consolation for the two women that were assaulted during the course of the night. So this allows people to take advantage. I have never said that people that are trans are of any danger. And people have accused me of saying that. I've never said that. I am fearful of the people that will take advantage of a law as Christopher Hanbrook did.
Okay, the bill has passed the House. It's in the Senate now. Where exactly is it in process?
It is at committee. It's on our Legal and Constitutional Affairs Committee. I'm a member of that committee. We have had a number of witnesses. We've had a number of meetings. But of course, one of the rules in the Senate is that whenever we get government legislation always takes precedence over private members' bills. So we had to stop our hearings for a period of time. I am planning on bringing forward amendments to the bill, and as a result of that, we have made a decision that we're just simply going to now, because it's so close to Christmas, we're going to leave it until we come back in the new year. I am going to be presenting some amendments, and I expect that we will be dealing with it early in the new year. It will be voted on at committee and then sent back to the chamber.
Do you sense that your fellow senators are listening to public input on this? Have you been getting a lot of public input?
I have personally been getting a lot of public input. I've been getting a lot of emails, both in support and in opposition to the bill. I believe all of my colleagues, certainly at committee, are clearly listening to it. I've had a number of my colleagues come up to me and talk to me about they didn't know that this and this was happening, or so on and so forth. We've had a number of witnesses, as I say. And so, yes, I believe they are listening and will certainly make a decision as to which way they vote on the amendments that I'm going to propose.
Is the ultimate goal here to pass the amendments or to stop the bill? And I guess, again, this goes to a process question. If the goal is to delay and eventually kill the thing, might it be delayed out to next October? Because I'm assuming once there's a federal election, it dies on the order paper, right?
Well, you're right with that comment. It dies on the order paper if there is an election. However, next October is quite a ways away. It is at the very, very end of committee meetings here. So it will go back to third reading in the chamber. And I would suspect that if the bill comes out of the Senate in February or March, there still should be adequate time for the House to deal with it. Now, I'm in the Senate, so how the House deals with it over in the other place, of course, is up to them. But certainly it is not my intent to necessarily kill the bill. I have always said I do not support the bill in its present form, would vote against it in its present form, but I believe that some of the amendments that I'm planning to bring forward will make it a little more acceptable. For example, you know, I'm not opposed to much of this being in the criminal code. It's the human rights side that I have a problem.
Specifically, what kind of amendments are you proposing to make this thing a little more palatable?
Well, I won't speak to all of the amendments I'm bringing in because I'm not entirely finished with it, but, you know, people can make some assumptions as to what some of my amendments might be. I believe that sex-specific areas such as prisons You don't put a biological male into a woman's prison until that person has had an operation. It would never work, and so I think we need to make some changes to the bill in that regard.
Senator Platt, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Have a good Christmas, sir.
You too. Bye.
This has been Lighthouse News, shining the light of biblical truth on today's current events. Production Manager, Mark Penninga. Technical Director, Nate Bosher. Questions or feedback, email info@arpacandidate.ca. Be sure to join us again next month for another edition of Lighthouse News.